Our scripture reading for this morning will come from 1 Peter chapter 4, beginning with verse 12. 1 Peter chapter 4, beginning with verse 12. And I'll be reading from the New American Standard Bible. Brethren, do not be surprised at the fiery ordeal among you, which comes upon you for your testing, as though some strange thing were happening to you. But to the degree that you share the sufferings of Christ, keep on rejoicing, so that also at the revelation of His glory, you may rejoice with exultation. If you are reviled for the name of Christ, you are blessed, because the Spirit of glory and of God rests on you. Make sure that none of you suffers as a murderer, or thief, or evildoer, or a troublesome meddler. But if anyone suffers as a Christian, he is not to be ashamed, but is to glorify God in his name. For it is time for judgment to begin with the household of God, and if it begins with us first, what will be the outcome of those who do not obey the gospel of God? And if it is with difficulty that the righteous is saved, what will become of the godless man and the sinner? Therefore, those also who suffer according to the will of God shall entrust their souls to a faithful Creator in doing what is right. Title of my lesson this morning is Tried by Fire. You know that God never intended for life to be easy if the only way life is brought into this world is through travail and sustained by the sweat of one's brow. Listen to these words in Genesis 3, beginning with verse 16. To the woman he said, I will greatly multiply your pain in childbirth. In pain you will bring forth children. Yet your desire will be for your husband, and he will rule over you. Then to Adam he said, Because you have listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten from the tree about which I commanded you, saying, You shall not eat from it, cursed is the ground because of you. In toil you will eat of it all the days of your life. Both thorns and thistles it shall grow for you, and you will eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your face you will eat bread till you return to the ground, because from it you were taken, for you are dust, and to dust you will return. Now you might argue, well, wait, what you just read me was the curse that God placed upon woman and man, all right? Why was that curse given? You say, because they disobeyed God, they sinned. We know God has planned salvation through His Son from before time began. If God had to plan salvation before He created man, then He knew what about man? That he would sin. And so life being difficult is part of God's plan for mankind. It's as natural as childbirth and work. Peter says in verse 12 of this reading in 1 Peter 4, Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery ordeal among you, which comes upon you for your testing, as though some strange thing were happening to you. I want you to imagine your favorite utensil or tool, either in your kitchen or your shop. Is it a particular pot or a hammer or a vehicle? Likely it's your favorite because you use it a lot. We don't buy practical things to shelve them. Now, imagine why God made man in His own image. It's important to understand what God's intent is for His children. As our Father, what does God want us to do? To become more like Him. to grow in His image, to bring Him glory. Paul wrote in Romans chapter 8, beginning with verse 16, "The Spirit Himself testifies with our spirit that we are children of God, and if children, heirs also, heirs of God, fellow heirs with Christ, if indeed we suffer with Him, so that we may also be glorified with Him." We have been bought for a purpose, and that purpose is to glorify our Father, to become more like Him, to be made in His image, redeemed, purchased with blood for a purpose. Now, I admit, life is hard, and sometimes it is overwhelming. Let me read you from Psalms 6. It's a fairly short psalm. "O Lord, do not rebuke me in your anger, nor chasten me in your wrath. Be gracious to me, O Lord, for I am pining away. Heal me, O Lord, for my bones are dismayed, and my soul is greatly dismayed. But you, O Lord, how long? Return, O Lord, rescue my soul. Save me because of your loving kindness. For there is no mention of you in death. In Sheol, who will give you thanks? I am weary with my sighing. Every night I make my bed swim. I dissolve my couch with my tears. My eye has wasted away with grief. It has become old because of all my adversaries. Depart from me, all you who do iniquity. For the Lord has heard the voice of my weeping. The Lord has heard my supplication. The Lord receives my prayer. All my enemies will be ashamed and greatly dismayed. They shall turn back. They will suddenly be ashamed." That sounds like a song where he's lamenting all of his troubles, doesn't it? You ever feel that way? I especially like the line that my bed swims and my couch is dissolved with my tears. And yet at the conclusion of the psalm, after his lament, after his prayer, he says, "But I know God has heard me, and I will be victorious over my enemies." It's easier to act your way into a better way of feeling than to feel your way into a better way of acting. What he feels is, well, life is hard. What he knows is that victory is for the righteous. My dad's first job as a newlywed was working at a smeltering plant. After a day's work, he would have holes in his clothes and blisters and burns on his skin. That'd be a tough job, wouldn't it? It didn't take him long to realize there were other things in life that he could do. And so he went into child care. He and Mom went into children's home work. But thinking of the smeltering plant, why was it so hot in there? It was purifying metal, wasn't it? Tried by fire. Without that process, then the impurities would not be burned off and the metal would not be strong. What was it? Peter said, "Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery ordeal among you, which comes upon you for your testing, as though some strange thing were happening to you." God said to mankind, "This is going to be your life from here on out because you are weak, because you are sinful. And through this process, there is the opportunity for you to come to grow in my image as my children, for the impurities to be burned off, for you to bring glory to my name." You've tried activities, perhaps sports or some work that requires you at the initial setting out on that particular activity to do some things that are very difficult to develop your body or to develop your mind, and And it's only through that that you're going to be able to accomplish what it is that you want to do. And as you gain strength, the proof is in the pudding, isn't it? Think of Saul of Tarsus as Ananias argues with God and says, God, are you sure about this man? I've heard lots of things about him. This is from Acts chapter 9, beginning with verse 15. But the Lord said to him, this is to Ananias, go, for he is a chosen instrument of mine to bear my name before the Gentiles and kings and the sons of Israel. For I will show him how much he must suffer for my name's sake. What was God saying to Ananias? What you're seeing now is not inaccurate. His lifestyle up to this point has been in rebellion to me. But he's a chosen instrument of mine. I am going to develop him. He will be tried by fire, and he will come out pure. From Saul of Tarsus to the Apostle Paul, as different as night and day. Where would Saul have been without his sufferings? Without the father taking an interest in the child. What does suffering mean? Well, it's not just tears on your pillow, is it? If I see things through God's eyes, the opportunity is there for me to grow and to be strengthened, for my backbone to become firmer, for me to understand that I am His child, and since Christ suffered for me, I must arm myself with the same mind. For he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin. That's where Peter starts this chapter, isn't it? In verse 1 of chapter 4. Suffering here means reward there. Groaning turns into exultation. Look again at verse 13. But to the degree that you share the sufferings of Christ, keep on rejoicing, so that also at the revelation of His glory, you may rejoice with exultation. It's not easy to have the frame of mind that says suffering is a blessing. But that's what God wants us to understand. Verse 14 says, your suffering not only strengthens you, but is proof of me walking with you. Verse 14, if you are reviled for the name of Christ, you are blessed because the Spirit of glory and of God rests on you. Proof of His presence in my life. Paul told the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 that he understood the temptations that they were having. But then he says there are some certain promises from our Father with regards to the way that trials come upon us. He says, there is no temptation overtaken you, but such as is common to man. And God is faithful and will not allow you to be tempted beyond that which you are able, but will with the temptation provide a way of escape. To the degree, verse 13 again of 1 Peter 4, to the degree that you share the sufferings of Christ, God knows what we can handle. He will not allow us to be tempted beyond that which we are able. He always intends for us to grow stronger through the events. Turn with me to hymn number 428. This song has been going through my mind all this week because of the lesson for today. 428. Rejoice when you suffer. Know me so, I found my Lord and He is mine. He won me by His love. I'll serve Him all my years of time and dwell with Him above. I found it so, I found it so. His service is my sweetest delight. His blessings ever flow. No other Lord but Christ I know. I walk with Him above long. His streams of love forever flow. Within my heart His throne. His yoke is easy, His burden is light. I found it so, I found it so. His service is my sweetest delight. His blessings ever flow. I've tried the road of sin and found its prospects all deceive. I've proved the Lord and joys abound more than I could believe. His yoke is easy, His burden is light. I found it so, I found it so. His service is my sweetest delight. His blessings ever flow. His yoke is easy. His burden is light. His service is my sweetest delight. Now, God is not sadistic. He is long-suffering with us. But it's not a matter of us suffering simply for the sake of pain. So He tells us then in verse 15, here's some things you better not be suffering for. Don't you suffer as a murderer or as a thief or as an evildoer or a troublesome meddler. Those are things that are naturally penalties for doing things that are wrong. And it's not a matter of simply suffering for suffering's sake. Because that kind of suffering as a murderer or as a thief brings only shame. Whereas the suffering that we endure as Christians is to produce. James writes in James chapter 1, beginning with verse 2, "Consider it all joy, my brethren, when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. And let endurance have its perfect result, so that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing." Our suffering is calibrated to increase our faith and enable us to endure, to be patient. To the degree that we suffer with Christ, rejoice, so that when Christ appears, we may rejoice with exultation. But there's a warning toward the end of this chapter. James says, not just God's children are going to be accountable to Him, but everyone. Verse 17, "For it is time for judgment to begin with the household of God. And if it begins with us first, what will be the outcome for those who do not obey the gospel?" Accountability is required of every soul, of every man. It's not a matter of, quote, buying in to this Christian thing. Everyone will stand before God. The interesting thing that James makes the point of here is that no one is deserving of God's grace and mercy. What was it that we knew that God planned before He even made man? To send Jesus to save us. Because He knew what about man? And He made him anyway. That we would sin. Paul says, "For all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And the wages of sin is death." It's not that God was blind to our weakness and frailties and sinful nature, but God would save if we would but obey. But even that salvation is undeserved. What we deserve is death. And so what James is pointing out here is, yes, judgment will come for the children of God, but it will come upon all men. And even the children of God are just barely saved. It is with difficulty, verse 18, that even the righteous are saved. In this passage, verse 16, Peter describes those who follow Jesus as Christians. This is the third and final time that this word is used in the New Testament. But if anyone suffers as a Christian, the first time that word Christian is used is found in Acts chapter 11, verse 26. And when he found him, he brought him to Antioch, and for an entire year they met with the church and taught considerable numbers, and the disciples were first called Christians at Antioch. The second time it's used is also in the book of Acts, chapter 26, verse 28. Agrippa replied to Paul, "In a short time you will persuade me to become a Christian?" And then this final one, "If anyone suffers as a Christian." What does that tell us? That this was a common identifier of those who followed Christ. Peter has used that phrase, Christian, and now he has used the phrase righteous, those right with God. Truly, those who have yielded to Christ's authority, even to the point of being willing to suffer for his name's sake. And yet, even at that, it's similar to what Job says, we get by the skin of our teeth. This is Job 19 and verse 20. "My bone clings to my skin and my flesh. I have escaped only by the skin of my teeth. If the righteous are scarcely saved, what will become of the godless man and the sinner?" Do you know what it means to be godless and a sinner? Well, he's just identified it in verse 17. What will be the outcome of those who do not obey the gospel of God? A child cannot inherit his father's blessings if he refuses to walk as his father wishes him to walk. On our own, we are worthy of death. Man will never be worthy of reconciliation or redemption. We are scarcely saved. Now, that may be hard for us to accept, but it's true. And yet, God's plan is for that, for us to be saved. "He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved," Jesus said in the Great Commission. It clearly shows not only the plan of salvation, but God's grace and God's mercy, and how we gain access to his glory. I have written it on the marquee. When tested to your limit, trust God to carry you through. Verse 19, "Therefore those also who suffer according to the will of God shall entrust their souls to a faithful Creator in doing what is right." Refusal to grow equals depart I do not know. What's your favorite tool or utensil? Probably one you use more often than any other. You bought it for a reason, to put it to use. So God has saved us for a reason. Do not be surprised at the fiery ordeal among you which comes upon you for your testing, as though some strange thing were happening to you. But to the degree that you share the sufferings of Christ, keep on rejoicing, so that also at the revelation of his glory you may rejoice with exultation. James 1, verse 2 and 4. Again, consider it all joy, my brethren, when you can encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. And let endurance have its perfect result, so that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. Tried by fire, purged of impurities, bought with blood for a purpose.